We're going to pick this conversation up again because I'm told that Andy Shaw, one of my favorite people, is on the line here. And he wrote a great, just a story today, that if you haven't seen it yet, an op-ed sort of piece, opinion piece, in the Chicago Tribune about, you know, I think you used the word haunted. You used the word haunted, Andy, and about sort of what was unveiled years ago about police issues. And how we kind of knew things then that should have been addressed in a bigger way. And I just want to say, first of all, happy birthday. I heard it was your birthday. Is it true? It's your birthday today?
Yeah, you know, I don't celebrate them anymore because no. When you get as old as I am, every year is maybe one of the last. And so it's not like the kids that love their birthdays, but Thank you. I'll accept your kind wishes gladly.
I saw that little mention in the Politico's rundown today, and I thought, oh my gosh, we're having him on the show. So that's very cool. So you talked about how, you know, as a retired journalist, you've worked for the Better Government Association. You're still a board member at Change Illinois. But here you talk about how back then we revealed at the Better Government Association over the course of years, hundreds of incidents. So you talk about corruption and misuse of tax dollars for sure, abuse of power. But you also dug way into this issue of wrongful convictions in Illinois, along with Northwestern Center for Wrongful Convictions. And there were things that were known then. Are you and you're feeling not so good about how that was dealt with?
Well, Anna, the George Floyd killing, the tragedy, and the what it outleashed around the country in terms of both peaceful protests and looting has made everybody think about a lot of things. And one thing I thought back to is something that comes up in my mind periodically, and that's what was arguably the most compelling investigation of the hundreds I supervised when I ran the BGA between 2009 and 2018, and that was a series on wrongful convictions in Illinois. What we did was we looked at 85 cases in which people were exonerated, that means freed, because DNA evidence found them to be not the perpetrators of the crime. This is 85 cases between 1988 and 2010. 88 was the start of the DNA era. What we found in those 85 cases are several statistics that I still find not just shocking, but haunting. Mm-hmm. These 85 individuals, all but two of them men, and almost all of them African-American men, spent almost 1,000 years in prison for crimes they didn't commit. 1,000 years, that's a millennium. They spent an average of 10 years plus per person in jail for crimes they didn't commit. While they were in jail, the real perpetrators of those crimes, and I'm talking about violent crimes, felonies, armed robbery, murder, kidnapping, rape, those 100 more violent crimes were committed during those years by the real perpetrators. That's 100 victims who never should have been victimized if we'd gotten the right culprits in the previous crimes. But most compelling and most troubling of all the statistics, in all but a couple cases, the convictions were based either on sloppy, inept police work, forensic work, or prosecution work, or they were based on deliberate fabrication of evidence, witness tampering, jailhouse snitches who were given reduced sentences for making up stories. In other words, in all but a couple cases, the criminal justice system put these people in jail erroneously and improperly. And guess what? Of these 85 cases, only one individual has ever faced real accountability. Of all the cops that were complicit, the evidence technicians, the prosecutors, and even the judges who let this happen, out of all those hundreds of enablers, only one person faced prison time for all that. It's a name you'll remember. His name was John Burge, the late commander of a homicide unit in Chicago who ran something called the Night Crew. These were detectives who tortured suspects, most of them African-American, tortured them into making false confessions. Burge is the only one of all these culprits who spent a second in jail, and most of them faced no disciplinary action at all, so there was no accountability. I told that story in a Tribune op-ed because it is one small slice of the racism that this country has been living with, sadly, for 400 years. The criminal justice system is arguably one of the most obvious, but there's also housing and education and social services and jobs and job training, all the things that create an underclass that ends up being, you know, criminalized and it's social problems and no fathers at home, half the men end up in jail. This is one of the component parts of criminal justice system that is based on racism and racial inequity. I thought the story was worth telling again because it has, in fact, haunted me for all these years.
Yeah, it spoke to me because I had done work on this early in my career as well, investigating sort of wrongful convictions when people really didn't believe that someone would sign a confession for a murder they didn't commit. There was a time when people just didn't understand that that could happen, it would happen. It just didn't feel as if, well, it was something believable. And
well, you know, when you're using cattle prods on body parts to create enormous amounts of pain and people are kept in interrogation rooms for a day or two without any sleep, limited food or water or fresh air, and told over and over, if you confess, we'll go easy on you, nothing bad will happen, you can get all this over with. You know, the psychological impact of that kind of interrogation strategy, it's almost like a prisoner of war. It's almost like you're trying to get somebody to say something that they know is untrue just to get out of, just to end the waterboarding or end the torture, end the electrodes that are placed on you. I mean, this is what happened in Chicago, yeah, and other places. But let me stress, Anna, that isn't the main reason that these people end up in jail. Most of these cases were not forced confessions. They were erroneous guilty verdicts in courts, mm-hmm, in front of juries and frequently in front of judges based on tainted evidence, evidence that was planted or made up or obtained illegally or through sloppiness. This was, and my conclusion here, which I think people need to keep in mind as they think about all of the fallout from the George Floyd tragedy, is this. The criminal justice system was set up by powerful political insiders who didn't care much about the plight of poor African-American men. And let me point out, none of these 85 men are or were angels. Almost everyone who ends up in these very difficult situations in the criminal justice system has had many encounters with police, and many of them are former inmates who had prior convictions. We're not pretending that they're choir boys who were somehow picked off the street. These were troubled individuals who seemed like likely suspects because they had been real suspects before, and so it was easy to visualize them as the sort of people who must have committed these crimes and deserve to be in jail. And that was part of the psychology. You know, they're the trash. They're the garbage on our streets. Who cares if they're in jail? And that's why the series did not provoke a greater outcry. There have been several criminal justice reforms since the series ran, thanks in part to the hard work we did in Springfield to get some changes. But by and large, the general public kind of goes ho-hum because they're not the kind of people you care about.
Andy, it's an important point. It's a great piece. Thanks for thanks for calling in today. And if people want to read it, they can go to chicagotribune.com and check it out.
Yeah, you got to go to the opinion section, Anna, and you got to kind of hunt because it's an older piece. It was in Politico today, but it actually ran in Saturday's Tribune. You can find it in the opinion section if you scroll down. And can I just say one last thing?
Sure, go ahead.
If you're a listener of Anna's and you read this story and you want to discuss it at some point, feel free to send me an email. My email is very easy to remember. It's Andy Shaw Chicago, all one word, lowercase, @gmail. Andy Shaw Chicago. And, you know, thanks for the time, Anna. And
thanks.
Your listeners should also check out our Change Illinois website. And if they believe in helping with the crusade for better government, which you know I led for a long time,
you know,
think about supporting us. Great to talk to you. It sounded like
Andy.
A couple of old TV dinosaurs now doing other things.
I know, right? It's so true, but it's good to hear from you, Andy, and doing important things. What you're doing is just learn more about Change Illinois. You're right. Check that out as well. Thanks, Andy.
You're doing great stuff, too. Take care.